Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around the district and from further afield. Coming up later in the show, how SPARE weather data is being used to detect the movements of hitchhiking insects. But first, let's talk about waste. Many of us are busy in the garden at the moment, and whilst we have green bins to put our green waste in for recycling, there's often, well, there's just not enough room, is there? And going to the household waste recycling site, oh, can be a right pain in the neck. If there's a massive queue of cars and you're sat there for an hour in the baking heat waiting for your turn. Now, of course, you wouldn't have gone in the first place if you'd known there was going to be an enormous queue, but by the time you get there, well, it's too late, isn't it? Now, if you've suffered from this, then you'll be delighted to know that Herts County Council has now fitted a webcam to the entrance of the household waste recycling site so that you can look on a web page and see if there's a queue and then quickly nip down there whilst there isn't one. Now, I've put a link on this week's blog on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website so that you can take a look for yourself. It really is very good. Now, better still, why don't you take advantage of the subsidised compost bins that Herts County Council have made available? That way, you can avoid the trip to the tip completely and get your own great compost for free. Now, as long as you've got a good balance of the sort of soggy green stuff like grass clippings and weeds and the brown dry stuff like dead leaves, chipped up twigs, newspaper, that sort of thing, and you keep everything, well, relatively small, relatively chopped up, you can't go wrong. Again, I've put some easy tips on my blog on the environment pages of the Radio Verulam website. Now, moving on to a different type of waste, there's increasing concern about the amount of plastic that's getting into our environment, and a new campaign has kicked off locally. It's called Refuse the Straw, and I spoke to Emma, who initiated the campaign, to find out more. Emma, thank you very much indeed for coming into the studio. So where did you get the inspiration for your campaign?
So I saw a campaign called Plastic Free July online. It's actually a campaign that started in Australia a few years ago, and it's gone global, and it encourages people to drop plastic completely for a whole month.
That's, when you say drop plastic, you mean give it up?
Give it up completely, yeah. Give up their plastic habit completely, or to take one or more small steps towards that.
Right. Okay.
And they had a great list online of things you can do. And there was one which was stop using plastic straws. And I thought, yeah, I can do that. Yeah. Or I can try and get rid of them from the entire town.
Wow. Okay. Well, should we say no to straws? I'm just thinking they are rather small, aren't they?
They are very small. But, you know, we use an awful lot of them. I've got a statistic from the US who use 500 million a year.
Okay, so when you look at it like that, there's probably some statistic about that reaching all the way to the sun and back or something.
There is a number of times around the Earth size of Wales or something. So they are small, but they're also completely unnecessary. Yeah. You know, we didn't used to use straws at all a few years ago. Most of us, you know, those of us who are, you know, physically able, we can sip. Yes. Our drinks, we can slurp them, and we just don't need a straw.
Yes, it has to be said that our lives probably won't be that much the worse if we were to never use a straw again, would they?
So
no. Yeah, I see exactly what you mean there. So are you just targeting, you know, sort of people like you and me, consumers, or are you taking your message to the places that give out the straws, the cafes and the pubs, for instance?
So I'm going for both. I'm trying to encourage people to politely decline a straw. Lots of places will just give them out automatically in your drink, and we need to discourage that. But I'm also going to pubs and cafes and restaurants and bars and asking them to either have straws on request or to move to compostable straws.
Okay. And how's that going down with the pubs and the cafes? Are they sort of saying, yeah, we'll do this? Or are they saying, actually, no, we don't think this is a good idea?
It's going really well. Much, much better than I thought it would. The campaign's been running since the beginning of July, so that's about 2 weeks. And I've got 13 businesses on board so far, which is just fantastic.
Wow, if carry on like that, we'll soon be a plastic-free town, won't we? So
yeah,
that's great, isn't it? So is it about, just as you say, just as politely declining and say, actually, no, I don't want to store? Or is it about us being a little bit more militant and saying, actually, I don't think you should be using plastic straws in here?
I leave that entirely up to people. I think one thing I've discovered in this campaign is that just by sort of approaching people in a polite manner gets you quite far.
Yes.
I could easily go on a big green rant with retailers about, you know, single use plastics, but I haven't needed to do that.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Okay, so really it is just quite easy, just as you say, the polite refusal.
Yeah.
Okay, so how about people, I mean, the people who moan about saying, oh, you know, it smudges my lipstick, or perhaps people with medical requirements that means that they can't drink out of a cup without a straw.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a friend get in touch, who's a disability campaigner, who reminded me that folks with cerebral palsy do need a straw sometimes to enjoy their night out. So I'm not encouraging anybody to get rid of straws completely. What I'm encouraging is for people to have either a paper or one of the plant-based plastics on offer for people who need them.
Right, okay. And so, you know, somebody listening to this and says, okay, that makes sense to me. How can we help?
How can you help? You can help by declining a straw when you're offered one. You can help by speaking to food retailers if you'd like to see if they'd like to get involved. You can help on social media, as always. It's 2017.
Yes.
With following us on Facebook and on Twitter. And our sister campaign, who started this week over in Harpenden, Refuse the Straw Harpenden, so please give them a follow as well. They've already had a success.
Right, fantastic. And I suppose if there's anybody listening outside the district, and we certainly do have listeners there, then there's plenty of room to start up other campaigns so that this spreads.
Absolutely, I would love that. So the Harpenden campaign is using the St Albans model, and I'd be quite happy to, you know, share the details of what I've done with anybody locally who wants to set up another campaign.
Emma, thank you very much indeed for coming and telling us about that, and we wish you every success.
Thank you.
I was talking to Emma from the St Albans Refuse the Straw campaign, and I'll make sure that information about her campaign goes onto the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Now, insects, well, they can be pesky little blighters, particularly if you're a farmer. A swarm of them appears out of nowhere, attacks your crop, does damage, brings a whole host of viruses with them. No warning. So scientists at Rothamsted Research near Harpenden have been making use of spare weather data to predict where insects will go next. I spoke to Charlotte Wainwright to find out more. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. So where did you get this weather data from that you used?
So the cloud radar and the LiDAR data that we've used in the paper are recorded at a field site in Oklahoma in the USA. It's run by the Atmospheric Radiation Measurement Program through the US Department of Energy. It's a large field site, and they collect all kinds of different meteorological data there.
Okay, and this was data that they measure but they don't actually use, is that correct?
Yes, well, the cloud radar and the LiDAR, they're using some of the measurements from that to try and study turbulence and different cloud properties, but if there are insects in it, then it's sort of messed up for the scientists, because they just want to look at what the air motion is doing, so the insects act as clutter for them. And then obviously that's the data that we're interested in, so it worked out really well.
Okay, well, that's quite a happy coincidence then, isn't it? And is this using, you know, somebody else's data like this, is this an example of sharing big data? Have I got that right?
We're not really doing big data with this project, because we are just looking at the one site over 2 months. But there's definitely big data applications with the data from that site. They record, they have lots of different measurements, and they're all standardised and recorded over quite a long time period.
Right. Okay. So hopefully your study should allow us to use a big amount of data that, as you say, is there. Excellent. So so these insects that were accidentally being recorded in the weather data, what did you think? I mean, when I think about little insects being blown around, I kind of think, well, of course, they'd just be blown around with the wind, won't they? Is that what you expected to find?
Yeah, we'd had some indications from a few previous studies that they might be doing something a bit different, but we weren't sure exactly what that was going to be.
Okay, so you were quite surprised by what you found then?
Yes, definitely. It's hard to picture these such small insects being able to do anything other than just being blown around by the wind and getting taken wherever the wind is going.
Yeah, exactly. So how did their behaviour differ from just being... What were they able to do to move in a different way?
So we were looking at how they react in updrafts and downdrafts when they're moving up and downwards. And we found that we know they like to go up to higher heights where they're able to disperse more widely. But instead of using up a lot of energy to try and make that ascent, they were waiting until they were in an updraft, and then they were using the updraft to carry them upwards.
Yeah. Okay. So they were a little bit cleverer than you might have thought. They were actually taking, being more purposeful about where they were being moved. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. So we saw them ascending in these updrafts to try and, raise the altitude. But then their behaviour was quite different in downdrafts. So it's obvious that they have some sense of what kind of air motion they're in.
Yeah, okay. That seems pretty clever for something, little aphids or little moths. Is this the kind of insects we're talking about?
Yeah, quite small aphids, sort of size that we've been looking at.
Right, okay. So you've found out that the insects behave and use the updrafts to give them height and then behave differently in downdrafts. This is great, but what kind of practical use can you put this to?
Well, everything that we've been trying to do, we're trying to find out more information about how the insects react in different atmospheric motions so that this can be added into prediction models to help us more accurately predict when and where they're going to disperse to.
Right. Okay. So are you there yet to, sort of helping farmers with knowing when insects are going to arrive, or is this just all part of a journey to making those predictions?
Yes, so they have some predictive models already, but this will be used to help to improve those models and hopefully make them more accurate.
Okay, and in this prediction of when insects are going to arrive, what kind of advantages does this give the farmer?
Well, it's really helpful for farmers if you can see a particular species in one area to know how that might move to the surrounding areas, because it allows them to time their pesticide application to ensure that they're not wasting any pesticide and that it's timed to be most effective.
Okay, so hopefully, although they are still using pesticide, hopefully they're only using it sparingly at a time when it's going to be effective, so perhaps even a little bit less pesticide in the long run. Is that the intention?
Yes, that's always our intention. And also, of course, every pesticide application costs the farmer money. So hopefully by enabling them to time it to be the most effective possible, that's saving them some money in the long run.
Yes, indeed. So hopefully a win-win there. Brilliant. Well, Charlotte, thank you very much indeed for coming and telling us about that. And we look forward to hearing more about these freeloading insects in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was talking there to Charlotte Wainwright of Rothamsted Research. And apologies for the slightly poor sound quality, but I'm afraid Charlotte was only available to talk on her mobile phone. And you can find all the information about what Charlotte said and the rest of the information from today's show on the Environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Now, voting is open for this year's St Albans Food and Drink Awards. And this year, voting is super easy. Super easy because here at Radio Verulam, we've made a super easy to use website for you to vote on. So go to the Food and Drink Awards pages of the Radio Verulam website and just click on your favourites. In particular, take a look at the Best Local Food Producer category, where there are fantastic organisations like Earthworks, who we spoke to last week, who are producing delicious food right here, keeping that carbon footprint really nice and low and producing lovely local food. So if you've got a favourite or an organisation that you think needs recognising for the great work they're doing, then do vote. As I say, it It is so easy on the Radio Verulam website. You just click on the ones you like and that's it. So, yeah, do go ahead with that. Now, if you fancy a walk in the fresh air, Healthy Hearts Walks, I've got a walk tomorrow at 10:30, starting from Caledon Road Community Centre in London Colney. This is a free walk, and it's going to be a nice, easy walk, so that even if you're one of us who hasn't perhaps walked for a little while, you'll still be able to manage it. Or perhaps you're a little bit more practiced and you fancy a longer walk, then you might want to opt for the walk from No Man's Land Car Park, and that's at the same time, 10:30 tomorrow, and that's 3 to 4 miles long, and again, that starts 10:30 tomorrow morning, 3 to 4 miles for that, so that's a little bit more challenging, and that goes round No Man's Land and Hartwood and all the lovely places up there. A little bit in advance this one, but this is a Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust event that gets really booked up. This is a dragon hunt. It's 11 till 1 and it's on Monday the 31st of July. And as I say, do book it now because otherwise it will be booked. You're going along to hunt out dragonflies and damselflies on Harpenden Common. It's suitable for all ages. It's £5 per person and you do need to book to avoid disappointment. And there's loads more activities, actually, that the Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust have got for kids over the summer holidays. But they're getting booked up really quickly. So even if you're looking for something at the end of August or wherever, make sure that you book it now. OK, then. So that's about it for this week. You can find all the information from today's show on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Remember, you can also download the podcast there so that you can listen to the show at your leisure. We always love to hear from you. You can tweet us at rv_environment or you can email us at environmentonrv@gmail.com. So until the same time next week, thank you for listening.